Blog Talk Radio.
You are listening to Get It Right with Dr. Bowles. Hello, my radio listeners. It has been some time since last you heard from me. I'm back, and I am very excited to introduce someone on today's show. I do have a guest in the presence of Ms. Cassandra Bell Gash. We're going to talk about today how it is to be a Black American woman entrepreneur. Now, you know I have talked about many topics over the years, and today is one that's near and dear to my heart. If you are able to get on the marquee, you'll see that I gave a little bit of information that the Black Americans struggled to make a way out of no way for centuries, and any of you people of color can certainly echo on that. Faced with this rampant racism and discrimination, industrious Black Americans learn to do for self. And they began launching their own businesses, and the number of businesses owned by Black American women have grown by 322% since 1997. That sounds exciting. It is exciting, but we can't overlook that the reason many of people of color have had to launch their own businesses is because they do not get fair pay, they are not promoted fairly. Their family-friendly policies, meaning nepotism in corporate America, have blocked many very intelligent and aggressive persons, and particularly women, who may have wanted to start their own company. I would like for you to meet in conversation today, Cassandra Bell Gash. How are you, Cassandra?
Oh, I'm well, thanks. How are you, Dr. Bowles?
I am very well indeed. I want to give you an opportunity to introduce yourself to the listeners, and I'm just going to say, tell us a little bit about you and your pearls in corporate America.
Great, thank you. Well, my name is Cassandra Bell Gash, and I'm a licensed therapist in the state of North Carolina. Just received notice that I've been approved for licensure in the state of South Carolina. And doing counseling and therapy is really near and dear to my heart through my company, Life Provisions, because I've dealt with many obstacles in my life, and the challenges that I've dealt with have made me a better person and more empathetic and in a position to serve. As noted in your blog, you know, my history comes from me being basically sabotaged as I had a multi-million-dollar company in the state of North Carolina. Some of that is not necessarily just the fault of the powers that be, but my lack of understanding of issues of diplomacy, the way you conduct business, the way you handle yourself, being educated, and being able to stand up for myself. So all of these things culminated into a beautiful rise in entrepreneurship and a devastating decline.
Now, I want to interrupt just a second, if I may, because I want to alert to my listeners. You're hearing a very candid story. Now, I haven't known Cassandra for a long time, but who I met, let me introduce her a little bit differently. Now, she's told you how she's come to be who she is, and she's a very humble lady. I've met a vivacious person who has a knack for quick study, and for those of you who know that language, it doesn't take much for her to catch on. Why do I want to introduce that? I am telling you that this is not someone who is slow to learn, who is slow to adapt, who does not have aptitude, but someone who should, in a fair level playing field environment, excel. She, despite the difficulties, made it to the top. And when I mentioned the idea of sabotage, she very humbly said she did not understand some of the politics. I'm going to be very frank and say there are loopholes that are built into systems. And if you're not on the inside, if you did not grow up in a household where such things were discussed, or you went to work with mommy and daddy and saw how they got around such obstacles, you are at a distinct disadvantage. And I like to emphasize on all the shows that I've done that color does not make you disadvantaged. It's exposure to knowledge, it's exposure to process, and it's exposure to the system. With that, I'm going to let Cassandra continue.
Yes, and I thank you, Dr. Bowles, I grew up in a married family household. My mom stayed at home, and my dad worked. He was a blue-collar worker for 38 years in a fiberglass plant in Shelby, North Carolina, and every day he did the same job. And he believed that life was routine. He didn't color outside the lines. He stayed within the box. And that's the way that I grew up. I actually did not see that an African-American woman could be in business and have dynamic positions until I went off to college. The late Sabrina Obi was my mentor, and I saw her doing things that I never heard about. And she took me under her wing, and she began to educate me things on how to dress, how to talk, how to have interpersonal relationships. And I think it was during that relationship in undergrad with her that I began to see the roles of women differently than that of my mom and the women in my family. So I took that experience and went to college and began to work in the human services field. From that, I was working at a state institution, and they were going to privatize mental health services. And so I had a dream and thought that I'd go for it, and I did. I did what I saw everyone else do. I filled out the paperwork that I saw everyone else fill out and collaborated with my coworkers and colleagues and began to have everything that I needed to open a business. I was always really good with working with people. I worked in the state psychiatric hospital, in residential facilities, and so I understood human services and serving the consumer, but was a little rusty on the paperwork protocols. I began to get well-versed in that through assisting in some state audits that were coming through for the company that I worked for. So pulling all of those things together led me to being able to establish Cleveland Family Services. And Cleveland Family Services basically grew overnight because of relationships. I had the relationship with the consumers, with their families, with the guardian reps, with the folks who owned the facilities in which some of the consumers lived. And instantly, I was a million-dollar company pretty much overnight. When I say overnight, the first 2 years were pretty rocky because my reimbursement was through the local management entity of Medicaid dollars. And I had a strained relationship with the powers that be there. I was completely outspoken. So when I humbly spoke of diplomacy, I can remember challenging that power in an open county commissioner's meeting. I felt like what I said was right, but the timing maybe not so. And it cost me a lot because that individual...
I'm going to interrupt again, Cassandra. The reason I chuckled, sometimes I have to explain myself. Unfortunately, again, I'm going to introduce the concept of being people of color. I have worked with some of the most arrogant, irritating, bombastic, outspoken persons who were white male. And nothing was said in a negative way. They were simply seen as leaders or they were outspoken. But if anything similar to that behavior is exhibited by a black female, we know the adjectives and the nouns they use to describe us, but never is it a leader or someone who is forceful in nature. So I guess the reason I'm interrupting, Cassandra, is that in hindsight, what I'm hearing you say, had you not spoken truthfully and forcefully and rightly so, you would not have been sabotaged. The unfortunate thing of that statement is we should always have the right to speak forcefully and correctly and not fear sabotage. So that's what I wanted to interject, but please continue.
Yeah. Well, you know, in hindsight, when I said diplomacy, in that particular meeting, the person that was over my capacity to be in business was also in the presence of their boss. And so diplomacy is, I probably could have said it in a different venue. I do respect leadership, but you are very much correct because the idea, the concept, and the things that folks would say was that Cassandra don't know what questions to ask. And, you know, I didn't know what questions to ask. My attorney in Asheville, I overheard him. I was going to his office, and I overheard him and a colleague talking, and they said the problem with Cassandra is that she asked the wrong questions. And so I learned early on. Yes, I learned early on that there was a mode of operandi, and if I didn't stay within the lines, then I would not be in business. And so, you know, you look at preserving your families and all of the hard work, and you try to do a balancing act. And I think that's one of the things that's difficult for women, that we try to balance being politically correct, but being assertive and making sure or ensuring that assertiveness is not viewed as aggression. There are just a lot of challenges for
women.
Well,
I'm just saying, Cassandra, you're giving the appropriate information to any young entrepreneur, black female, who wants to follow in your footsteps. But the pain that I receive in hearing it, being one seasoned and tread upon like yourself, is we should be beyond that. That why do we have to learn a second set of rules? I mean, I too am forthright and speak very quickly. And I too have learned that I have to stutter step sometime or hold my tongue or have that secondary meeting or try to build that other alliance. And this is something no one really talk about. And that's why I guess I'm harping on it a little bit. The successful people learn exactly what you're saying and they adapt. And I'm sure that's going to be your current modem, and you're going to advance back to your previous standards of high achieving and high earning. But my comment when I'm talking to the young entrepreneur and any other listener in the audience is, why is this necessary? Isn't it time that we stop pretending that the duality does not exist? It's there, folks. Now, if you want to be very successful and you want to get a mentor, and I will have you at the end of the show again, Cassandra, to salute your mentor. I believe in calling out people who have led the way and helped us make good decisions. But I also like to use this show as a forum of saying we're going to not whisper. It is unfair that you and I and other black women who are out there trying to make a living and doing things correctly must have to also learn to whisper instead of speak soundly, have to look at the floor rather than into the eyes of the person they're speaking to, and even suffer the indignities of someone saying you asked the wrong question. That's a very childlike, almost chastising comment.
Oh, exactly.
Now I'll turn it back over to you.
Oh, no, you're fine. And so when I heard those comments, I was in Asheville working my business there, highly successful, and I wasn't paying anyone any attention, but I was informed that I was walking places where I shouldn't walk. I was doing things I should not do. And so it was very subtle, or maybe not that subtle, that an African-American woman should not be doing these things, or more specifically a black male. A black female should not be operating business to that degree. And because that was the thought processes of those in power, even when my services was challenged, they went as far as not to even do a full Medicaid audit. They did a clinical review. They pulled $1,064,000 worth of claims, stated that I did the services incorrectly, every chart. I begged, I requested for a full service audit. No one would even return my calls. I wasn't handled based on policy. I believe I was handled because I was African American, black, and because I was female. And I can remember quoting even to the North Carolina Attorney General's office. I can remember quoting the 14th Amendment, and I have it before me as we speak. And it says the 14th Amendment to the Constitution was ratified on July 9th, 1868, and granted citizenship to all persons born or naturalized in the United States, which included former slaves recently freed. In addition, it forbids states from denying any person life, liberty, or property without due process of law, or to deny any person within its jurisdiction the equal protection of the laws. How did I lose a multimillion-dollar business and no one returned my call?
Well, I mean, I know that's a rhetorical question.
Yes, was that they went as far, government of North Carolina went as far as to change the appeal process. And even though my appeal was in the Office of Administrative Hearing, they backdated 30 days and put me in a new process.
Whoa.
Where does this happen? Where does this happen? And so in me speaking out and calling from the FBI, the United States Department of Justice, calling everywhere, there was no help. And I realized that I had to reinvent myself. And there was no way I was going to admit guilt without an audit. An audit has never taken place. It's been 7 years. 10% of my
bill
is 8 months. No one can tell me where that money is. And when you call...
Well, wait. I have to slow down, Cassandra. Hold up. 7 years. What is the statute of limitations on these kinds of investigations? So this is where, and I've done this before on the show, I call out to those students who see themselves as being avid students of law. I would ask people of color, those of you who are studying United States law, and you know the loopholes and the travesties that many people of color find themselves, why is there not a coalition of very learned people seeking out cases such as the one you've just heard with Ms. Bell Gass and say, wait, I want to take this up. Now, why do I throw it out, Cassandra? There are groups at Loyola in Louisiana and certainly at Stanford and Yale and Harvard where they go back and review cases where people are incarcerated, and part of a classroom judicial training among lawyers, they review, discuss, and then reopen or challenge. I don't know why there is not, and if there should be, please advise me. I call a shout out. I don't know everything. I don't say that I do, but if there were a black legal group who volunteer their services to investigate injustices such as the one you're hearing about today, please contact me. You can find me. This is Dr. Velva Bowles. Google me. They'll tell you how to get in touch. You can go through Blog Talk Radio. But I think it's overdue that the concept of social justice shouldn't just be reserved to the Supreme Court, should not just be reserved to certain specialized persons who are hand-picked as black leaders, not by black people, but by media and by some other persons in power. Why aren't we addressing such issues as this one and making sure that there's some restitution for this just vicious behavior of the judicial system in these United States of America? Okay, I'm going to get off my soapbox. Go back, Sandra. Cassandra, give me the rest of it. I just fires me up.
Well, you know,
7 years.
It's been 7 years.
You've been in limbo.
Yeah, I've been in limbo, but I completed a Master of Divinity in Pastoral Care and Counseling and a mental health counseling degree. So I spent those 7 years in graduate school. I'm currently working as a therapist in South Carolina, and one of my passions is that of social justice. There has to be a way that we level the playing field and ensure that the distribution of wealth and the opportunities for wealth and the privileges are fair within our society. And that's what the essence of social justice is about. And so it calls something to speak up. It calls something to speak out. And so in humbly sharing that, you know, I assume responsibility for the things that I didn't know and the way that I said things, but the way that I'm built, I couldn't have lived with myself without speaking out. Then what is the essence and the purpose of my life? And I believe in having and living a life of purpose and of calling. And the benefits that I had was because of those foot soldiers who spoke out many years ago in the 60s throughout the civil rights movement. And so now we get to live and drive and have luxurious experience on the back of folks who bled, who died, who cried, and we take those liberties as if they are nothing, and we don't lay the groundwork and continue the fight for those who are coming behind us. So in humility, I do acknowledge that I was not perfect. I'm sure there are things that I could have done better. But I believe in fighting for what's right. I call for all women to stand up and not be afraid of what it costs you. Yes, it costs a lot, but I could not have lived with myself with the freedoms that I experienced had I not fought for the things that I believed in. And that fight required me to walk away from that multi-million-dollar company because I refused to enter into a payment plan for something I didn't do. If I did it, then you deal with me according to the equal protections of the law, and you do an audit. And I closed that business, and that never happened.
Wow.
And so that's
think that what we should do, and I want to take the moment to salute you, that during 7 years, and since one of your master's degrees was in divinity, you know that seven has a very significant biblical statement. It's a number of completion, and that you, rather than sitting back and feeling sorry or whatever else, angry or hurt, you went on and in remaking yourself actually acquired two more degrees. So you bolstered your credentials. You continued your networking system such that you did not lose your contacts. And I understand that you had a ribbon cutting not too long ago in the reestablishment of yourself. Tell me a little bit about that.
Yes, I will, but I want to just backtrack just a little bit.
Okay.
And when you state I didn't lose my contacts, I want to encourage women that you will lose some stragglers along the way. You will, because everyone don't believe in standing up for what's right. Moving forward, the ribbon cutting was for my new company, Life Provisions, and the name, of course, has significant meaning because provision for me was not the millions that I was accustomed to, but it was me being a recipient of taxpayers' dollars through my daughter being on Medicaid and me being on food stamps. Now, you can imagine, or I don't know if you could, but it was very challenging to once be a provider of Medicaid services and now a Medicaid recipient. That was the most humbling experience of my life, for I had never been on government assistance. But government assistance did for me what it is designed to do. It was a stopgap. It allowed me not to worry about the health care of my child and the feeding of my child while I went to school. And I'm happy to say that I was able to get a job and work and get off of government assistance. I want to challenge all mothers, all of the women that every 6 months go and be reviewed and reinstated for their government benefits. Do not use that time idly. Get off the couch. Pick yourself up. Figure out what your God-given talents are. We all have those. And move forward. Have a plan. No, it won't happen overnight. As I stated, it was 7 long years. I spoke to an individual this week and said, you've just grown overnight. And I said, no, it was not overnight. It has been a 7-year crawl. But I just want to encourage women that I understand. I understand the embarrassment. I understand how little one may feel having to receive benefits. But I encourage them to use it as a stopgap for the hard times. Life Provision, the word sums it up. We're looking to provide resources and opportunities through interventions, strategies, instruction, oversight, and nuances of services. We want to encourage people to live within the provisions that are there for them and have the courage to create provisions for themselves. And I believe that's what women in America are doing, that we are creating jobs for ourselves. We are creating opportunities, and you create based on there being a problem or something that you see that don't exist. And sometimes people prefer to see things that are already there, but it takes away your creativity. And so I just want to encourage women and all persons alike to never lose that divine gift of being able to create.
Well, that's marvelous. I tell you, I'm listening, and I want to say amen, sister. I do want you to have an opportunity in these last few minutes to talk a little bit about Life Provisions as a company. Now, I know that it's going to be a multi-state establishment. I did capture that in the short time that we interacted. Tell me some of the services or what the extent of services Life Provision offers in what areas.
Well, Life Provisions offer individual, group, and family therapy. We've adopted a client-centered approach to treatment, you know, through clinical diagnoses and collaborative treatment planning. You know, we aim to assist just all persons with the personal growth and development according to their strengths and their preferences, abilities, and their needs. We also, you know, we work with child, adolescent, adult group. We offer counseling in the scope of mental health, substance abuse, grief and loss issues, crisis intervention and management, and career counseling as well. Some of the additional services that we provide is in the scope of business. We believe in a process-centric approach. It's proven, it's documented history, and we're happy to share our lessons learned. Whether you're new or existing organization, we just offer training and want to do some quality control stuff with folks, corporate development, mentorship. We're available in these various scopes of practice.
So how does a client contact you? How do they know you exist, and who are your clients? Maybe I need to back up and ask that question first.
My current clients are private pay clients, corporations. We are pursuing Medicaid waiver in the state of South Carolina. We are open to be part of insurance panels as we look and see what type of insurance our clients have. And once again, I said private pay. So we're really just getting off the ground. We have passed some federal clearances, and we're excited about some possible research and development opportunities. And so we want to be innovative in our approach. We want to educate, we want to train, and we also want to support.
Now, what sounds, just hearing your capabilities, whenever there is a disaster like the shooting we had here in Lafayette, Louisiana, or the shooting years ago at the Columbine High School, is your facility prepared to take on those type of counseling, grief counseling, or federal assist after disasters like Hurricane Sandy and Hurricane Katrina?
Yes, we are. We exist in those federal systems, and we have a team of folks who on notice would be able to come out, more so including myself. And so we're really excited about that.
Okay. Okay, that sounds wonderful. It seems in this conversation, Cassandra, I have just learned of a part of you I didn't know. It sounds like we may have to have a future show, and it may not be only focused on the concept of entrepreneurship. I think that you have a knack for mentoring listeners in general, that whenever you've had experience, that term is called you have been tested. And I think there are a lot of people who can benefit both from your personal experiences as well as your formal trainings, because you're saying you have a master's in divinity and also one in counseling. I missed the counseling part. Tell me again your credentials.
I have a master's in education specialist in mental health counseling and a master's of divinity and LCAS, licensed clinical addiction specialist.
Excellent. Outstanding. Well, I think that we can possibly get some partnerships for you because it sounds like you are certainly tested. You have stood the, tried, and you've had your seven-year time period. If you look at the biblical stories, I think you have probably sat down long enough and grown in many ways wisdom-wise. And as we come to a close, and it doesn't seem like we've had 30 minutes together, but we have, I want to thank you tremendously for being my guest. And could you, before we're off time, tell me who your mentor was? You said late someone, and I missed her name.
Sabrina Obey from Durham, North Carolina.
Well, I salute Dr. Obey, Ms. Obey, because I'm sure that she lives on in you. And I always say on my show, we need to know upon whose shoulders we stand. So with that, Cassandra, I'm going to thank you so much for being a very lively guest. And I look forward to future times on the show.
Thank you so much. My contact information, I can be reached at 704-297-5202. Once again, 704-297-5202.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. And until next time, Cassandra, I will say thank you for this interview. And listeners, I thank you for your attention. And until next time, stay safe.
Thank you. Bye-bye.